Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cybersecurity Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by my good friend, Luke McConey. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. How you been, my friend?
I'm good. I don't think I'm quite as busy as you there, mate. You sound like you're absolutely, completely and utterly like full throttle, fifth gear, like after it at the minute. Sounds like you've been having some fun as well, though, mate.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. First off, business is just booming. The company is growing and exploding. Blue Bastion has done really well. Our parent company, Ideal Integrations, is just, you know, growing by leaps and bounds as well. But yeah, we make time for fun. We've been doing some hacker happy hours and a lot of these trips and a lot of these visits we've been doing. I'm in NOLACON New Orleans for NOLACON all next week. Like, I leave tomorrow. And then right after that, we've got Richmond, Virginia with RBASEC coming up. And I'm speaking at that as well as a couple of my coworkers. So yeah, just nonstop busy, but super excited.
Yeah, cool. It's been good to see you. It sounds like you've been having some fun. And I'm really happy to hear things are going well. And it's really nice to hear you talk about how you're doing things differently and that relationship-driven approach. And you're having some meetings that involve some physical FaceTime. And I think there's so many of those intangible things, mate, that are just so intrinsically linked to success. So perhaps we'll get into some of that later. But yeah, for the listeners, mate, that don't know you, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. If I pronounce anything wrong or get anything wrong, feel free to shout at me after, Luke, but I'll try my best. But back in the mid to late 90s, mate, you were the founder of Root Cellar Security Consulting. You were then in a security leadership position at Midbank Consulting Group. Then you moved on to Arrow Electronics, where you were a security consultant on offensive compliance security. You were then at BT, where you were involved with offensive security there. You were then the director of Red Lambda Inc. You were also the director of consulting services at One World Labs. You then went on to be an advisor involved with offensive security at Coalfire, and you currently hold the position of Vice President of Offensive Security at Blue Bastion. We got that right, mate?
Yes. Yeah, that's the really long-winded way of saying I have been a hacker nerd since I was a teenager. But yes, I have worked exclusively in offensive security since 1994. I've held several positions. I did a lot of hands-on keyboard for the first 20 years of my career. And really, over the last decade, I've had a focus in trying to be the glue, right? I'm not going to be the smartest guy in the room anymore. The kids and the folks that are coming out of school and coming out of these programs are amazing nowadays. But I can help give them guidance and tell them what the old guy thinks. So yeah, no, that's on par. That's a good intro. Thank you.
No reason. And I tell you what, it'd be nice, like, not just saying it, mate, like the way you interact and the communication piece, the way you communicate, I can see why you've progressed to the level you have. So it'd be good to get into your tips and hints on communication skills for the listeners, because I think there's a lot people in the security and offensive security can learn from that. But I'll start where I always start, mate. I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but what's day-to-day life like? What do you get up to professionally? Is it really stressful? Is it still good fun? Yeah, what do you do, mate, day-to-day?
Yeah, so my lovely wife and I and my 25-year-old kid live off-grid in a bunker on the side of a mountain in Colorado, 100% off-grid, power, water, sewer. We grow a lot of our own food. A couple of weeks ago, wife was out on the front porch. Big old bear was standing down in the bottom of the driveway staring at her the whole time. We've had 200-pound mountain lions come wandering through the backyard 5-10 feet from the house. It's a crazy life up here, but we really enjoy outdoor life and we really enjoy Colorado. It's just exceptionally beautiful up here. So we spend a lot of time hiking the woods and hunting, fishing, all that kind of stuff. I love snowboarding, but I've been busy and haven't been doing as much of that as I should. I'm also getting older, so it hurts a hell of a lot more when I crash nowadays. But no, most of our time is really spent in growing our business. Blue Bastion is a subsidiary or a division of Ideal Integrations. We're based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but I've got employees that are all over the country. About 150-person company. Ideal Integrations has been around about 20 years. Blue Bastion, I think, is on its 11th year now. The offensive security division, we're working on our third. So as we've blown up and grown this business, it's been a great relationship to have and a great opportunity. Usually when you start a company, you're starting from scratch. I walked into a book of business that was 20 years old. So it was wonderful. We just got to go give our clients more value and really help them in ways that we previously hadn't been able to do.
Cool, mate. I bet the way you live there is pretty cool. So you're just like completely independent. You do everything yourself.
Yeah, 50 acres. Like right now you're talking to me on the primary connection is a Starlink. The secondary is a point-to-point that fires a wireless signal down into the bottom of a valley. But as you can see, I really don't struggle with internet connection or issues like that.
Yeah,
so it's entirely capable and easy for somebody nowadays to say, I'm done with the city life. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
Like, tired of these rolling blackouts, tired of having to deal with neighbors I've never met. Like, I'm going to go buy acreage and get off grid. It's a completely obtainable goal.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm going off subject of it, but I can imagine like having that level of self-sufficiency. I can imagine it just works wonders for like anxiety levels and stuff like that. You're self-sufficient. And in today's world with everything that's going on in the world globally right now, like I feel like there's a lot of anxiety in the world, but I can imagine living like that. I bet there's something quite relaxing and self-assuring about that.
It can be. At the same time, when things go to shit, you're the one paying for it, right? So if your power goes out or if you're having trouble when you live downtown, you've got to call up the power company and they send over a technician and they inspect the lines and they check to make sure you're getting power to your box and all that kind of stuff. Up here, if I have power problems, that's my problem. I got to go look at the solar tracker. I've got to look at the controller. So I got to make sure the wind turbine's bringing in power. But it's great because, to your point, once you become aware of it and once you are knowledgeable in how to maintain and take care of that from a day-to-day basis, it is powerful. Cameron Peak Fire swept through, burned hundreds of thousands of acres of Colorado, largest wildfire Colorado's ever had a few years back. And when it was happening, we were the only people really on the mountain that still had an internet connection and had video where we were able to report and tell our neighbors what we were seeing off of the various security cameras around our property. So yeah, that was lovely. But at the same time, like I said, it makes it to where all of a sudden your life is now your hobbies and your lifestyle and your...
Yeah, listen, I bet it's pretty cool. Mate, we could probably have a long conversation about, I did a ski season, skied and snowboarded for 5 months when I was a bit younger, so we could probably have a lot of conversations about snowboarding and stuff like that. But yeah, I used to wear one of those back supports for the bottom of your back where it absolutely wrecks, isn't it?
Yeah, that way you don't end up messing up your tailbone.
But yeah, no, thanks, Luke. And I think where we'll dive into first is, so, can we talk about, I know you guys and girls are literally rocking at the minute. I know we were chatting before we came on and you were talking about how you're doing things a bit differently, relationship driven, partner orientated. I appreciate you perhaps won't be able to give away everything, but as much as you can say, what are you doing differently that's meaning you are rocking and rolling in this market right now that could help other people listening?
Yeah, I think that people are still very pandemic focused in how they're operating and executing their businesses. So they still are very transactionally focused. And I think that those days are starting to dwindle. Businesses are becoming more and more mature as far as their security programs, their overall security processes. Just the businesses as a whole are growing up. And I think that as that is happening, a lot of these corporations that once were doing a once a year pen test, a kind of point in time type execution work, they're realizing that's not enough. Right. I have a slide in one of my recent slide decks that I do that picks on people that do the once a year compliance, just getting the checkbox for the purpose. It's like going to the gym once a year, right? If you're that dude who only goes to the gym once a year, you're not even going to know how to use the machines or how to work out or what the etiquette is, much less actually do anything that's going to build strength or lose fat or anything like that. And I think that big businesses are starting to look at cybersecurity in the same way, where they're like, this isn't something that we can just hope is good or hope goes well. We actually need to put investment and capital behind it. The more mature businesses, those who have really started to grow up and have spent some time and money around this, now cybersecurity is an integrated part of the business, right? It is not its own branch or its own division or its own part of the corporation. It is industry-wide. And if you're doing it right, having it go throughout the entire enterprise, all the way from your board and your C-level executives, all the way down to operational staff, third-party vendors, everybody else that's making it happen. When you start approaching and thinking about creating security programs like that, then it becomes something that truly can show a return on the investment. It truly drives change, positive change within the business. And it involves everyone and creates a situation where everyone from, people who are maybe just interns or basic contractors, all the way up through your board level, they understand that they have individual responsibility and accountability and even ownership in this greater program. So I think that by taking that type of an approach in how we talk to our customers, how we align their needs with the specific services that we tell them, and really offering ourselves as advisors and vCISOs, that's a way where we can really drive that change and make it to where it's something that's going to be different for them and it's going to be impactful.
Yeah, cool, Luke. Thanks, mate. I think everyone listening will want to have those type of customers. I think they'll see the sense in the from all sides of the equation to have that relationship driven approach. Is it hard to get the clients there? Do you have to educate the clients? Is that a bit of a journey? Have you got any kind of tips or hints, or is there like a methodology you have, or is it just about finding the right clients and walking away from the clients that don't want to interact like that? How does that all work to actually get to that stage?
Yeah, when we first get on the phone, a lot of times it's because a customer says, "Hey, I've got an insurance underwriter that says I have to do once a year pen testing to make sure that I can get a cybersecurity insurance policy." We'll jump on the call with them. We'll have that discussion and that conversation. Obviously, this is the motivator for them. They've got to get a policy. It's a requirement, probably from their larger corporation or the partners that they're working with. But as we visit with them, we really try to use that time as a discovery session where we can understand not just what their needs are. I'm not just looking to get on the call and figure out what I can sell them, but really a discussion about their maturity and understanding where they're at in that journey. We use something called the programmatic approach, where we break down the way that we approach businesses into four different quadrants, and it allows us to really become intimate with the way that the business functions from a day-to-day operation standpoint, what their office culture is like, what are the tools and the things that they use to enable themselves to be profitable, who are their customers, right? It's not just about sitting there asking them how many IP addresses they have or what their mission-critical application is and how can we pen test that. It's really the bigger conversation about who are you and what does it mean to you to be secure? Why do you want security? Is it something because you're chasing that compliance checkbox? Or are you doing this for best practices because that's the correct or proper way to be able to operate?
Yeah, cool, mate. Thanks for that. So, Luke, do you think some companies, a client comes on the call and maybe others would just bang, go straight in for the PCI DSS, and it's almost like you've got to actually go, well, hang on, let's really sit back and listen and then use that information to then educate. And then it takes things to a different level. You add more value and it's more of a fruitful relationship for everyone all around.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I think that two sides of that coin. Number one, the first example you gave, businesses are smart nowadays, and they're starting to understand that where this used to be the Wild West, where you could just go into a business and say, you need a pen test and sell them a pen test. People now are starting to understand that that's maybe not the most important thing that they need to spend their money on right now, right? So the canned approach, as we call it, that you see a lot of the really large consultancies take, I think is burning out very quickly. And I think you can see that with the huge rushes of layoffs that are occurring within the sector at those larger corporations and businesses where people really, have been falling on this. We have a standard operating procedure. We're going to go into the business. We're going to execute this type of open source intelligence and vulnerability gathering. We're going to conduct this vulnerability scan. We're going to get those reports. And we're going to go in and we're going to poke and validate vulnerabilities to try to show the client and customer the difference between something that could be a false positive and a real finding. That type of thinking is 20 years ago. And if that's all you're doing for pen testing and for security assessment around your corporation, you're barely scratching at the surface. And I think that as we can get people up to speed on that, they start working with providers and partners, they start getting more appropriate budgets, and they start executing this work. I think the biggest thing that I end up seeing from customers is that they're pissed because they will have worked with another provider for 5 to 10 years, and they were getting A-plus report cards every time. It looked great. And then my team walks in, and 6 minutes into an internal pen test, they've already got domain administrative credentials that they're pulling back to crash or to crack the hash so that they can then leverage that to persist and just dump that entire environment. I think that when you've got corporations and businesses that aren't doing the least acceptable level of effort from what we would see from any threat actor group or any script kiddie group out there, you've really got to question yourself as to what value they're adding. Other side of that coin is that when we talk to customers and we talk to clients about this, budget is almost always the biggest limiting factor, right? It's not willingness or them wanting to be secure or them wanting to do the best that they possibly can do. But having a limited budget tends to be the thing that makes the decisions and really drives the actions as to what they execute or what they do, right? We'll get customers, they'll call us on the phone and we'll sit there and scope for 45 minutes to an hour and they'll want everything. And then when they look at the pricing around things, they'll say, oh, this year we've only got $35,000 to work with or $100,000 or $500,000 to work with, whatever it is. And I think that one of the biggest things that people need to do around communication is start being honest with themselves and their providers. If you've selected a provider and you trust them, you've seen examples of their work, you've seen examples of their pricing and what they're going to ask you for, right? Anyone that you're going to partner with should be transparent about these things, right? It shouldn't be a secret sauce that they're hiding from you. But if you've got a good idea of what that looks like from who it is and what they're offering, then be open about your budget. Because then the professionals that you're hiring to work with you can understand how are they going to be enabled to actually make the biggest positive impact within your environment, leveraging the money, the time, and the resources that you have available. And budget isn't just money. Budget is how many headcount do you have available to help with the project, and how often can you be available for a status update, and what does all of that look like? But I think the more that people can open up about their communication, being transparent, being honest, and being, you know, in a partnership versus a client third party type relationship, that they're going to see a much better spend of that dollar.
Thank you. You're giving such an insight. So I'm getting loads that obviously this discovery phase, this scoping bit, you can be scoping out for 45 minutes, an hour, or whatever it might. I'm getting that is really valuable and it's really linked to the success you're having. I'm presuming this isn't being done by a sales guy or girl that's never done a pen test before. This has got to be done by probably you or probably someone that's really can communicate and has that deep, deep knowledge, has spent a lot of time on their hands on the keyboard and so on and so forth. So just for folks listening, what does that look like on your side? Is it yourself? Yeah. Is it you and others? Yeah. How does that go down, mate?
No, you described it. We have sales relationships, folks that sales, as you put it, that they manage that relationship. They set up the phone calls. They do all of that, but they're not going to be the folks to jump on the call and really discuss in depth what it is that you're trying to do from a goal perspective or what types of assumptions exist or limitations there need to be within the work that you're doing. So we always pair it up with a delivery director. COSM does a lot of that work for us. I also jump in as well and do a lot of these phone calls. Sales folks are more for taking the stuff that we take from our notes that are really related to that discovery process. We'll translate that into a basic bid sheet with some formed language that really helps us describe the service, talk through what it is that we're doing and what the customer is getting for that spend. And then sales folks will take that and they translate that into a proposal that they deliver to the customers. From that point forward, really my job and Q's job and our senior staff occasionally jump in as well, is to be available to answer questions and provide clarity and guidance on anything that's there. A lot of times when we do this process, we'll have customers come back and they'll be like, wait, we asked you for X, Y, and Z. You scoped X, Y, and Z, and you are 2 times the price of this other provider. And it's that provider price, X, Y, and Z. And we'll sit down and we can look at the 2 proposals, right? And I don't care about who the company is. I don't care about the pricing. I don't care about any of that. All I want to see is the list of the services that are being provided so that I can understand kind of the scope and the depth of what's being done. And what you end up finding is that a lot of people have a lot of different definitions for what a pen test is, right? A lot of people have a lot of different like language and expectations that they set around what a VCSO or an advisory type like engagement is going to look like. And I find that really having that conversation and being able to lay down 2 pieces of paper, I always push my customers. It's if you're going to run us up against another corporation, ask them for a sample deliverable. Read them side by side. Tell me which one you like more. Maybe it's not ours. Maybe you want something that's 300 pages of Nessus output that has some basic vulnerability validation, and that's what you want to call pen test, and it's really thick so it looks impressive to a non-technical board. Go do that all day long. That's going to be a hell of a lot cheaper than having somebody come in and do 2 weeks of coordinated testing where they're targeting every single possible way they can that's specific and unique to you, where they may be able to get in to your keys to the kingdom. Each customer is going to have a different need. And I think that one of the biggest things that gets lost in that communication is that people get on the phone, and if it's a salesperson or if it's somebody that works in this industry, maybe that's their sixth or seventh or eighth or 10th phone call that day. And they get on there and it's just a rhythm to them. So they run through the process and all they're trying to do is sell that pen test or sell that service or sell that firewall, whatever it is that they're pushing to try to meet that SCIF. But in the end, if you don't have technical people driving the conversation and jumping on that call, you're missing a huge opportunity to develop a greater understanding and intimacy of what that client will see as success when you're completing the engagement. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we always include technical folks on the call. And I really think that the best thing that folks can do out there is to challenge the people that they're bringing in. Don't just accept that what they're being told is word, right?
Thanks, Matt. I can really see the value in that, because when, as we talk about, again, discovery and scoping, let's say you've really got to have the knowledge. And I can imagine if they just throw a price at you, if you don't literally understand the ins and outs of it, you could essentially just be, you know, have nowhere to go there. So that makes a lot of sense, mate. Also as well, look, I really like, for people listening there, it sounds to me like you are most definitely prepared to walk away from stuff. Not every partnership is going to be correct. So and I suppose there must be the scenarios where some clients do just want, like I say, that tick box, that transactional mm-hmm. type approach. And I suppose, do you just walk away at that point, or do you try and...
No, I'm happy to help them. If that's what they want and that's what they need, then that's what we'll deliver. We're always going to be flexible and do whatever we need to do to support the folks that are supporting us as we grow as a business. I've worked for other corporations and businesses where absolutely there was a contract that would be too small, or there would be a contract that's maybe not something that they want to take on from a liability or a responsibility standpoint. I think that's smart business as well. And I think that you've got to be able to have good clients to ensure a good, healthy business for your employees and for the people you're working with. So I think there's a balance that has to be struck. When I walk away from business, it's usually because the customers ask me for something that's not in our wheelhouse, or I can refer them to a friend who can do it better. Like, I'm happy to, always happy to do that. This is a large industry. There's plenty of money and business for everyone. I think that the more we can work together to ensure that the customer is getting the best value for their spend, the better off we're doing to ourselves and to our ability to go to sleep at night knowing that we're making a world a better place, right?
Cool, mate. It sounds like you've really got this. So it's the programmatic methodology, yeah?
Programmatic approach.
Did it take a long time to get that to where it is today? Was that quite a journey? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's lessons learned there that go back 20 years, right? Like things that I'll give you an example. Anyone who works with me has probably heard me say this at a time or not. I use this to keep myself in check because I can ramble and tell stories all day long. I'm happy to wax poetic on anything, right? But my grandmother used to say, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Learn to use them proportionately. And I think that with a lot of these corporations and businesses, going back to the example I was giving before, sales folks and other people that jump on the call, again, they've got 30, 40 minutes maybe to capture the knowledge, the attention, close the sale. The problem with it is that they get on there and they fire off versus just asking the customer, what is it that you want? What makes this a win? Why are you giving me the time today to try to sell us to you? And what is it that we can do to ensure that this is valuable for you?
Yeah, cool, Luke. Thanks, mate. I'm enjoying this because I can relate so much of this to recruitment, by the way, and when you meet clients and stuff like that. So it's really interesting. And it ties in really nicely to where we'll take it next, which is on the communication side of things. Like I said, clearly, mate, you've got those communication skills really rocking. And again, was that a journey? Is there any tips and hints you've got for people listening on how to get your communication skills good, whether it be on the client side or with your team internally? Any thoughts there for people, mate?
Yeah, I tell people, depending upon what your level of comfort is, I've met some people who are exceptional communicators and they're introverted, to where maybe during an entire conversation, they'll say 5 or 6 sentences, but those 5 or 6 sentences all hold great meaning and depth. I think that people who can weight their conversations like that and who are capable, talented communicators, I think those people are rock stars. Absolutely amazing. I find myself being wordy. I like to tell stories. I find that if I go into to go give a speech, or if I'm trying to teach or train somebody on something, or if I'm trying to take something that's really technically complex, and I'm trying to help someone who's maybe a non-technical member of a board or of an executive committee really be able to understand it, that it's important to be able to tell stories to associate or relate the people back to what it is that you're talking to them about. So I'll do things and I'll try to figure out what those people's interests are. And I'll speak to that if I have any knowledge at it whatsoever. I've fallen down on my face with this before, right? I met a guy that he was obviously into cars. So I tried to talk to him about cars, right? And tried to use the associative language to, nah, it was horrible. I find that the key, because I'm not a car guy, right? I'm a nerd. I find that the key is to be able to talk to them in a way that's going to be meaningful, respectful, connected, and really be able to demonstrate not only the message of what you're trying to communicate or get across to them, but also a passion for what it is that you're speaking to. I think way too many people go out and they'll look at what they want to say, or they'll get approved to go do a speech at a conference somewhere, and they'll write the slide deck and they'll prepare it and they'll read it 40, 50 times, and they'll do their speaker notes, and they've got all these little key points that they've got to ensure that they hit upon, and they'll practice and practice and practice it, and they'll record it over and over again, and then you'll watch them go up on stage and they'll freeze than the 400 times they've practiced it at home. I think that being natural and being real is one of the things that makes communication much more effective. You'll notice I curse not a lot. I try not to, but it comes out, and it's because when I'm communicating to people, especially about something that I'm passionate about, it's something where I speak with that passion, and I try to share knowledge, or I try to share information and connect with the people that I'm talking about in a way that's going to hold their attention and make it to where it doesn't sound like I'm just droning on.
It's cool, mate. Listen, you can swear as much as you want on there, Luke. Don't bother me, mate.
Don't get me in trouble. You set me up for failure, man.
Cool. So basically, if you can do that clear, concise communication, the fewer words you can do it in, the better. I really like the storytelling thing, by the way. I've heard from multiple people on different podcasts that I listen to for self-development and growth, that ability to tell a story is a really good way to communicate. So clear, concise, really tell a story and try and make it relatable for your audience, basically.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things I would tell people is I watch folks all the time, right? You'll have somebody that's responsible for IT security. Maybe they're a director, vice president, whatever. In their mind, the most important thing is that they reduce the vulnerability footprint within their environment. So they'll go to an executive board and they'll say, hey, I need money. We've got to buy this program. We've got to buy this software. I need a new headcount. Otherwise, we're going to be vulnerable and we're going to get hacked. We've seen other examples in our industry of people getting ransomware and crypto locked and having their backups destroyed. We've got to protect ourselves. Give me money. Totally the wrong way to go about that conversation. The way to do that is that you figure out who your audience is at the time, and then you speak to them in their language, right? So if it's a chief financial officer, you talk to them about what the investment is going to do, how it's going to be able to help the company maintain its posture and ability to operate and generate revenue, right? You talk about the things that are important to the person you're talking to. With the CEO, they're going to be very interested in the overarching vision, appearance, mission, and execution of what's going on. How is your spend going to help that? If you're talking to someone that's the head of HR, they're going to want to understand the impact that it's going to have on personnel and what they may have to do to be able to support change within the business. But it's like, people don't think like that. People think they come to a conversation, they want to say the things that they want to say that are important to them, that they think are key. But in order to be an effective communicator, you have to put yourself in the other person's shoes, and you have to figure out what is it that's going to be most valuable to them, most meaningful to them. Are they going to care about a Microsoft patch that's been missing on a server for 4 months, or are they going to care about the fact that there's actually a breakdown in a process somewhere, which is why that missing patch has been missing those 4 months, right? What gap existed, the why behind it? I think when you start speaking at that level, you will find yourself being much more effective and efficient in getting things done with customers in a way that really accomplishes the goals that they're coming to you for.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Luke. And I think it's easy to fall into that trap of just going like really deep in the weeds, especially if you're in the weeds all day. And let's say someone at C-suite, probably they're just going to glaze over, mate, aren't they? They're just not going to know what's going on. But yeah, I think it's a really valid point, mate. And I know that mistake will be being made by many mates. So thanks
for that,
mate.
Yeah, great way to not get budget is to make your C-level executive in your board feel stupid. That's a great way to go. Go in and talk to them about everything that they've never heard of or that they don't understand, and then ask them for money. See how good that goes for you.
Okay, thank you, mate. And just going back to what you said before, like you talked about some people having a budget of 35K, some 100, some half a million. And that's to establish all this first is just absolutely imperative. I can imagine if someone's budget is tiny and they're saying they want a full-blown red team engagement and they haven't got much money to spend, I say it's not going to go very far. Is a security posture where it needs to be? Because if it isn't, the game's going to be up in 5 minutes flat. But it's definitely, I can really see the sense in letting them really talk first and really understanding. It's the only way you can actually provide the best service possible, by really understanding what they've got going on their side first, mate, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's key. I don't want to sit here and repeat myself, but I think the biggest mistake that a lot of people make is that they come to the call ready to sell something versus coming to the call ready to listen. And the big difference is that I take God knows how many calls a week, sitting here looking at my calendar, trying to count that high right now, and I don't have that many fingers and toes, but it really does remind me of just how often I go to a call with one ask. And then as soon as I actually start speaking to the customer, we'll find out that the motivating factors, the drivers, the reason there's budget in the first place, really don't have to do with what the salespeople captured for the pre-call. Okay. Or maybe the email that the customers originally sent to me saying, hey, this is my immediate need. That may be their immediate need because of 40 different influences that told them that's the immediate need. But when you actually sit down and talk with them and visit with them, you'll find maybe that's not the best spend right now. Maybe there's better things that we can do at the moment that are going to make that positive change.
Definitely, mate. And I think that skill of listening, I've said this before on the pod, but people go, oh yeah, listening, it's easy. I think that is a real skill. You've really got to that one mouth and two ears thing. I think that's a really key thing to lock into, because it isn't as easy as people think. You've actually really got to care and show an interest, and you've got to focus. I noticed from doing this pod, like, you've got to focus on what people are saying, and really, if you want to actually hear what they're saying and really take it on board, you've got to focus. Cool, mate. So, Luke, we're talking about loads of wicked stuff. I know, like, the busyness levels are good. I know you've been here, there, and everywhere. Can you tell me about some bad times, mate, some tough times, and how you overcome them? And I say, mate, it all looks great at the minute. I'm sure, I know success isn't linear. I know there's setbacks along the way. Yeah. So, yeah, any tips for getting those resilience levels where they need to be successful in security these days?
Out. I sound hippie-ish when I say this. Envisioning what it is that you need. What's that win look like? And then being able to walk yourself back to what it's going to take to get there. I think that a lot of people have in their mind a very good idea of what it is that perfect it would be for them, or right would be for them. But I think that until you really understand what it's going to take to get you to that point, you can't spend your time, your resources, your effort effectively in order to grow and achieve that. At a big shift, like in my career, when I joined Coalfire, and this is years ago now at this point, but when I joined Coalfire, I first started as like a director of penetration testing, and did that job for quite some time before moving over into the CXO advisor role, where I was more helping strategically and helping shape business. And I remember there was a time where we had a contract where one of our clients had brought us something that they wanted tested, and our consultant that was going to do the testing had to be pulled to work on another engagement. So I was going to try to step in and do this engagement. So far over my head, man. It was one of those where I had been being a manager, I'd been being a director, I'd been doing all this other work. So I hadn't been really heavily hands-on in several years at that point. And I tried to step up to do that work, and it was humbling, right? It was one of those where you're like, man, I thought I was just going to tear that to pieces. And really, this is all new technology, new software, new architecture. I don't even know where to begin. And moments like that, although they can be hard for your pride, I think are really good for educating and teaching you. I had another one. This is probably about 6-7 years ago. I had an interview for a company out in Southern California. I was very interested in this company. It was a gaming company. And I'd gone through months and months of interviews with them and had no idea what the actual job was that they were interviewing me for. It's not really how they functioned. They were more of hiring people for the right person and then creating a role for them versus having a role and then hiring the person for the role. And I went on site and I told this story this last week, and it's why it's top of mind for me. But I was talking to a room of folks at a local DEF CON meetup, and I go out for this interview. It's on site. It's supposed to be a full day interview, like 8 hours on campus. They're really making the final decision as to whether or not it's going to be me or somebody else. And I go and I just absolutely bomb the interview in every way I could have. I my brain wasn't there. I wasn't connected. It was rough. And I remember after it was all over and done with, I knew I bombed it. I knew it was going to be rough. And I just couldn't let it go. I ended up going back home, and it was still like weeks later. I was just grinding on this stuff in my head. And I had a follow-up call with one of the people who I had interviewed with, who was like one of the recruiters for the company. And I had found out that they had hired someone internally that they were able to get that was honestly probably the person that was going to get the role from the very beginning. And me bombing didn't obviously do anything but help them get that role. But I remember the lesson learned coming out of that is that, especially for a lot of these folks that are looking for work right now or that have just recently been laid off, is that don't put all your eggs in a single basket. And if you have a bad interview, rebound. Don't let this stuff get to you. Don't let it eat you up. I watch a lot of people who, I had a buddy post, I think it was yesterday, he said he's hit his 100th interview and still not gotten a job offer in information security. This is someone who is working for one of the largest named companies in our industry. Very capable, very talented, certainly doesn't want too much money, and just cannot find a new home right now. And I think that a lot of people are going through that. And I think the biggest thing people need to focus on is being real and figuring out what differentiators you have that are really your plus ones, right? If I open a job right now and I say that I'm hiring a senior pen tester, I'll have 400 people apply. Of the 400, maybe 40 of them will be worthy or at the level where they would be worth a follow-up call. Of the 40 that we do a follow-up call or touch base with, maybe 10 of them might make it to a second round of interviewing. By the time we get down to that third interview and really putting them in front of our executives for fit and feel, you've got one or two candidates, and that's out of 400 people that applied that on paper may look like they've got the right certifications, the right experience, the right background. But it's not until you speak with someone that you'll really be able to understand and know, are they going to be the right fit for the company? I will always hire someone who is a better culture fit for our company and our team and allow them the space to grow and learn than someone who may be an expert in their field, but's going to bring toxicity into our company or onto our team. You could be the absolute best in the world, top certified person, literally wrote the book in something. I will not hire you if I think you're going to come in and bring people down. So I would say that is when I talk to people about being real and opening up and being vulnerable and not being afraid to say the things you don't know and the things that you do know. That stuff all really comes into play when we're making a decision as to who to build our team with or how to grow.
Yeah, thanks, Luke. And honestly, mate, thank you for that, because it's so easy, mate, to look at you now and look where you are and just it's fine for him. But obviously, mate, there's been some difficult times. And you hear it again and again from people that are really doing well in the industry now. You mentioned your pal there that has gone through 100 rejections. I had Leo from NetSpy on. He's a managing consultant there. He'd been knocked back 15 times. And again, dusted himself off, took the feedback. He had to push to get feedback every time and use that as fuel and ammunition to keep pushing forward. And yeah, it's interesting to hear that. Also as well, mate, about the cultural fit and the communication. So you talked about how the industry is getting smarter and more mature and companies are getting smarter. I can relate that to what you've just said there as well, because I think back in the day, you perhaps could get away with being maybe a bit of a diva and going in there and doing what kind of, not whatever you want, but within reason. And you'd probably got, certainly even in 2022, when it was ridiculously candidate led, you'd probably got away with it. Things go in cycles, things come round. And I think, like I say, I think these days, that communication piece, the cultural piece, as you mentioned, it's just becoming equally as important as the technical skills, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the days of the pumped up rock star with a huge ego are long dead. I don't think that really lands well within this industry anymore. There was a day and a time where, you're right, a lot of the ego was driven there, and the way this industry operated was a lot of people like myself who had grown up being black hat hackers who then tried to become business professionals and had a long, arduous trip before they could figure out how to do. I'm still learning every day. But I think that we have grown into our adulthood in this industry now. And what we're seeing is that there is a place and a time, you know, in the past for that behavior. And I'm not going to knock it. I'm as guilty as anyone of that. But I definitely think that moving forward, the key is being able to be someone who can be relied upon, trusted, dependable, you know, that rock star mentality of, you know, I'm going to stay up and hack all night and work through the weekend and blah, 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 and come in and start all over on Monday. Yeah, nobody wants to do that shit anymore, right? Like, life-work balance is important. Business hours are important. These types of things matter. So I think that there's a handful of companies out there that could still learn these lessons. But, you know, if I'm coming to you with $1 million budget and I'm saying, I want you to build out our security program and I want to help, I want you to take us from A to Z, I probably don't want the person that I'm paying that money to or that program to or the time to be the same person that if I go on their social media, I can see just spent the last 2 weeks at a festival somewhere and they're still off their gourd. And it's like time and place for everything. And yeah. Again, I love all that, but it's, you've got to have an appropriate balance on this stuff. And I think that as the industry matures, companies and organizations that can show that they can function as a unit and that they are going to have the customer's needs and priorities in mind and align with them when they're executing and performing their work. And they're going to have professionalism to be able to deal with troubles or frustrations or issues or challenges that come up. Those are the types of things that are going to make the big difference and are going to be something that are going to be a differentiating characteristic that'll be meaningful to that customer to where they'll want to work with you. They'll be proud to work with you versus it, you know, questioning whether or not the person's going to come back and help them, you know, the week after DEF CON, Black Hat and B-Sides.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Like you say, it's just, I think for people listening, it's important to be adaptable because you're right, times have changed. Again, if I relate it to recruitment back in the day, there was some questionable things that went on, these old school agencies, some of the larger ones especially, doing all sorts and smiling dial 300-400 dials, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And it's, at the time it was more accepted, but things have definitely changed in the hacking world, security world, recruitment world. It's the modernization of the way things are going, mate. So thanks. And yeah, mate, it sounds like we talk a lot on the pod about getting comfortable, being uncomfortable and pushing yourself, and it sounds like you've done a lot of that 8 hour on-site interview. Jeez, man, that, I'm not surprised, mate, that you were felt under some pressure because that sounds crazy.
It was nuts. That corporation, interestingly enough, has had other issues come up since then that make me very happy that I didn't get the work there. Okay. You don't want to get tied up in, going back to what you were just saying, you don't want to get tied up in the wrong sales or marketing or conference type activities, which they did. But that process for me was such a broken process. It's such a weird way. I realized that Microsoft does this, Amazon does this, Google does this, Apple does this. But I think that it's such a bizarre way to conduct business anymore. A person's out there looking for work. Having them on the hook for 3 to 6 months is a tough ask, right? Mm-hmm. And then to ask them to dedicate time to jump on a plane, to leave their family, to leave their life, to come spend a day or two at your facility. That's great for fit and feel, but I also feel like it's a bit overkill sometimes depending upon the role or the responsibility, right? If someone's coming to work for you and they're doing a help desk job or a tier one engineering role, that's probably a pretty big ask. If they're an executive and they're going to be leading business within your organization, I can understand it a little more, but it's, yeah, I've heard some horror stories about some of these companies, incubators specifically in California, where people would be required to go live there for 30 days, essentially having to donate their time, their energy, their effort to even see if they're going to be asked to stay. And it's, I would warn people that if you feel like you're going up against something like that, you've got to question yourself what the value of the return is. And if it's somewhere you really want to work.
Yeah, definitely, man. I think as well, look, as long as you keep the mentality of keeping going, it's almost like when one door shuts, another door opens. And I believe everything happens for a reason. And long story short, I don't want to sound cheesy or anything, but as long as you don't give up, as long as you keep going, yeah. as long as you're in the security industry for the long run, you will find your path. And if you keep that mentality, and like I say, mate, I've had so many people on that have told similar stories to you about this setback and that setback. And it's actually shocked me. I'm like, oh yeah, I bet, for example, there's been some setbacks. But when you listen to it, you're like, perhaps he does deserve to be where he is. Perhaps he has had to come over a bit of adversity. And it's nice for the listeners to hear it, because especially with social and social media and all the rest of it, it kind of paints this picture that things have come easy and stuff like that. But it's just never
not
the
really,
case.
Not really. Let me tell you the number of times. I had a startup one time, one of my favorite jobs ever, and Red Lambda. And we literally got a phone call that the company had been acquired, sold. And it was one of those on a Monday where just all of a sudden you don't have a job to go to, right? Like you literally don't have a job to show up to. And it's, I think that there's a lot of people who have gone through that in the last couple of years with the post-pandemic fallout in the industry. Hundreds, thousands of people have been laid off. And I know that a lot of those folks out there are still fighting the fight. And to your point, the biggest thing, don't give up. Remember that it can feel like you're just not going to find the right place or like you're doing something wrong, but just be patient. Remember that it's an incredibly competitive industry and that it's only going to continue to grow. From a need perspective, every corporation, every industry, every business needs security. Sometimes they just don't know it yet. Mm-hmm. But if you're patient and if you just keep at it, you will find a good place to be and you'll find folks that will treat you well. The other side of the coin is don't settle either. Don't go get a job or make the wrong choice in your career because you're just scrambling to try to make sure you pay bills. You can always just go find a job for the time being to make sure you can make rent while you're continuing your job search to take that next right step in the career. But the key is don't beat yourself up. Don't get lost in depression or anxiety about it. Just take the time you need and find the right place to be.
Definitely, mate. And yeah, I know people that have done that exact thing you've described, mate. It is worth holding out for the right thing. In fact, to mention Leo again, I think he sat down with it and he said this on the podcast. He won't mind me saying, but you know, he sat down with his wife and he was like, how long have I got before I'm getting a pizza delivery driver job till I find the right thing? And they worked it all out, and I think he like just did it in time before he went down that road. So yeah, that's it. It is tough. I say that old saying, if it was easy everyone would be. But it's always going to take some grind. I just find everything takes longer than you think. If you think something takes 6 months, it just takes like a year or two. Like it just yeah. I don't know, like maybe I'm just like, I look at it with rose tinted. I'm like, oh yeah, we'll get that sorted. No, always takes way longer.
Yeah, always. And there's always going to be a vacation or a holiday or somebody that's going to take a week off. So it's going to take that a little longer too. But yeah, I think in between this last job, I had several offers. You and I were talking about that before the call. Some of the people that I'd talked to there. But going through that process from one job to the other, that was still a 6 month process for me. And I had pretty much come to Blue Bastion with a proposal saying, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what it's going to take. This is how I'm going to get there. Still going through that process while interviewing with other jobs, having to figure out what was going to be the right choice for the family. Yeah, that was half a year of time. I was not expecting to be unemployed at that time. Coalfire had done a massive layoff. And it was interesting to watch the impact of that, not just with myself, but other people. I know people that got laid off during that round, and not just from Coalfire, the industry as a whole at that time, who have since left like information security. I've watched people go become developers. I've watched people go back into system and network administration. I've watched a couple people go and get jobs in entirely other corporations or businesses. Now they're selling real estate or working at an office, supporting doing like their local. So I get the struggle. You've got to be able to pay the bills. But at the same time, like, it's really easy to sign on with the wrong company and find yourself a year or two down the road and realize that you've lost that time or that effort that could have been moving forward towards your greater goal as well. So I always tell people, I don't think there's a hard answer one way or the other, but it's got to be a balance.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And thanks again, Luke, for that. I think as well, like just being real with the closest family members around you, especially if you're coming off the back of a 2021, 2022. There's a lot of inflated salaries flying around and there's all sorts of crazy offers. So I think just perhaps sitting down and just being real with those loved ones around you and just saying, look, here's the situation. This is it. Because if everyone's got used to a certain way of living and holidays and stuff like that, I think if you're trying to hide stuff, I can imagine from a pressure perspective and a psychological perspective, that gets pretty difficult. So I think just being realistic with everyone around you will really help, mate. For everyone listening, me and Luke had a load of questions and I said, oh, I bet I'm not going to stick to any. And I don't think I've asked you anything that I was going to ask you. So
we have either. It's just been a nice visit, though. I dig this.
It's been good, mate. But I am going to ask you a couple of the questions at least that I wrote down.
All right,
so it wasn't a complete waste of time. Learning resources, mate. I know now you're in a much more of a leadership role, stuff like that. But any resources that you found particularly helpful for your career progression over the years, mate, that could help the folks listening?
Yeah, man, there's some really good stuff out there. There's a million good books I could sit here and cite. I think mentoring is probably the first thing I'd lean into. Find someone that you respect the way that they lead or that they run a business and ask them if you can take on responsibilities or roles, maybe help lift some of the stuff that they've got to do from a day-to-day basis. But being able to find a mentor or a group of folks who do a similar or related role to be able to sit there and talk to and visit with it, you can still have your confidentiality and still play it safe and be able to talk in generic terms and get a lot of good information and advice from other people about the ways that they handle challenges that are out there. As far as like individual programs go, if you're going down the technical route, most recently when we're hiring people onto our team, we do a lot of different stuff. Pentester Academy, the Offensive Securities Proving Grounds has some really great labs. Try and Hack Me. There's a lot of good stuff out there. I think that the more you can just get hands-on keyboard and more experience, the better off you'll be. Keeping in mind that all of those different types of things are typically scenario-driven, teaching you a single lesson. It's going to be very different when you're jumping into a large network enterprise type environment, trying to figure out which way to go and what to get done. But getting those basics down, I think, is huge. For communication, I think that public speaking is huge. It doesn't matter what it is that you go speak about. You can talk about your dog or a project or something you're interested in. It doesn't matter, but just getting out in front of people, learning how to build a deck, learning how to communicate, tell a story, and connect the audience to what it is that you're trying to tell. Those are all really big things that can help you grow and mature. I know there are things out there like Toastmasters and some of these other organizations that people go through. I've seen a lot of positive results for people. I don't have any one specific program that I would really point at on those lines, but I think that kind of stuff does help as well. Even if the speaking is just doing something in front of some friends and family, that can be a pretty safe support system, right? Because you know that your hecklers are at least going to love you versus just taking on a black hat or a DEF CON type speech for your first time speaking ever. That may be pretty intimidating, right? To get up in front of several thousand people. The other thing that I think has been really helpful is I did a program a few years ago. Usually wouldn't lean into this kind of thing, but it is something that's been meaningful to me. Is I went through a course with Landmark Education, did their forum and then their advanced course. I was really impressed with some of the lessons that came out of that because it changed the way that I think a lot when I communicate and how I communicate, right? And there are little lessons that they teach you, all these little tricks, the but versus the and in conversations and other things like that can really help shift the way that people perceive what it is that you're saying and how you're saying it to them. But those types of programs also really help you with integrity, time planning, focus, and really can help you get ahead of yourself, right? Attention deficit disorder, neurodivergent, I don't need help getting in my way. I am more than happy to procrastinate and do another day what I could have done today. There are a million different things where going through that program really helped me deal with some of my self-integrity issues where I was getting in the way of my own path of growth. So I would lean on that a little too. There are a ton of business programs out there that I think are really good. Force Management had some really great courses for sales and leadership type stuff. And again, you could look at my bookshelf and it's full of stuff from everything from army generals to CEOs of the largest companies in the world. And I think that all of them have a little something that you can pull out of each of the stories that are being told. I don't think there's any one given person that I go, they did it right. But I think that there are lessons from each of those that have really helped me figure out how to operate and function and to help support a business from a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Wicked answer, by the way. And none of this happens by accident, does it? You're clearly not resting on your laurels, even at your seniority level. You're still pushing forward. You're still doing the core. You mentioned that landmark course, which sounds banging, by the way. You're really, really pushing on. And I think for people listening, even for the really senior people listening, I think the mentor things, I just think it's huge. I don't know if you've noticed it, but I've found since I've been remote, if I have a bad day, I find myself questioning even some of the basic stuff. I'm like, shit, am I doing that right? And I think just having a sounding board and someone to speak to from the mental health perspective, when you are spending a lot of time working virtually these days, I think it's paramount, mate. But just to hear that you're really not, you're certainly not chilling, mate. Like, you're cracking on and pushing forward. It's nice to hear.
No down days. My day to just sit around and play video games with my wife and kid. And I should do that all the time from a life worth and a health perspective. I should be able to do that and be happy. But if I do it, man, I get anxious because what are all the things I could be doing right now?
that's really struck it because that's how I get. If I chill, that's exactly it. The most relaxed I am is when I'm grinding away. It sounds crazy. I used to think I was a bit weird, but maybe we're all weird.
Yeah, I think that as long as we're keeping busy and keeping the mind moving, it'll keep us young forever. So I always try to follow that kind of mentality.
It will, mate. It will. Look, I know you're mega busy, mate, and I promised you an hour, and I think I was chatting to you for quite a while before we hit record. It's been really nice, mate, honestly. I said to you before it would be a very conversational and naturally flowing episode, and it has definitely been that, mate. And just to really hear you, just the level of openness and transparency that you've given me and the listeners, it's really appreciated, and I know it will help people. So thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you. And for anybody out there that's listening, if you've got questions or if you want to shoot me an email, hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm slow to respond sometimes, but I always will get to your message. Feel free to reach out.
Yeah, cool. No, brilliant, Lou. Thanks again, mate, and I'll speak to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me.